Welcome to the Talk with Tori podcast. I'm your host, Tori Jones, and I'm so glad that you're here. It's time to have some fun. On each episode, I will chat with a friend and we will share random life topics, tips and tricks, fun stories, and more serious stories filled with some real talk to make you laugh, maybe cry, make you think, but most of all, bring a smile to your face. We all have a story to share, so I hope you enjoyed this one. So grab your favorite Starbucks, a glass of wine, water, I don't care. You do you, girl, because it's time to peel back the layers and add a little spice to it. SK, we live, girl. What's up? Oh my gosh, this will be fun.
I'm so excited.
Y'all, she's moving in 2 days, 3 days. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, I want you on the podcast, but if we want to do it in person,
we got to do it now.
So I was like, well, do you want to have dinner after or what? And y'all guess what she requested? Stuffed peppers from Sam's.
It's my favorite. And y'all always have it. And it's the best. And Josh's banana pudding. I'm really excited about this.
The Snoop Dogg banana pudding.
Snoop Dogg.
I know. It'll be good. Actually, so for Valentine's Day, we, you know, made stuff out of the Snoop Dogg recipe book. But we kind of had a game changer because we listened to Snoop Dogg music as we cooked.
And so I got you hype.
Oh my gosh. Drop it like it's hot. I was like, I haven't heard this since high school. That's what I'm talking about.
That's so
bad. All right. So let me tell y'all a little bit about Sarah Catherine SK, who is on the show today. She's so funny. She makes me laugh. But she also has a really powerful story to share. And she shared it in some ways, but never like fully like this or anything. So I met SK. How long ago were you in college?
It was 2015, and I actually was going through all my stuff because we're moving. I didn't even tell you this, and I found a letter you wrote for me when I officially became a KD. Like, it was very generic. You sent it to all 80 pledges.
Oh, but my gosh, yeah.
It said, I'm so excited you're here. Like,
how fun.
What a fun place to be, yada, yada, yada. So I met you the day of
when you became a KD.
So,
and then your senior year at bid day is where we like rekindled because you were kind of booing with this guy, but whatever that I knew. And then, but you fell in love with my dog and your dog had just died.
My dog died. And I was like, I need Louis Snuggles.
Yeah. So you like came up, you're like, do you mind if, I remember like you asked me, you're like, would it be weird if I came over and snuggled with your dog? I was like, well, no. I mean, I've never had anyone ask me that. I mean, people love little Louie, but like, I was like, sure. So you just kept coming over and we called her his nanny and things never changed. And she, like, he's road tripped with you to Virginia.
I took him to your wedding.
Yes. She was the best pup attendant. Louie walked down the aisle and she got him from the aisle. Had to go pick him up, bring him around. Yes. And so they have a sweet little bond. He's going to miss her so much. You're like his favorite person. And so, but yeah, so SK's been a part of our life through our puppy. So that's the beauty of dogs. And we just love her. She makes Josh and I laugh so hard. But yeah, well, I'm excited for y'all to get to know her, but I won't tell y'all anymore because I want her to chat. So, because y'all know I could keep on. So tell us a little bit about you.
So I am a graduate of Auburn University. I graduated in 2019,
which you're like so young ago. You're so young. Oh my gosh. We always forget how old you are. And we're like, she is like 15. Like, wow.
Yeah. Cause all of my friends at Auburn are Tori and Josh. and so I am a paramedic. I have worked for East Alabama and Opelika for 2.5 years now. And I'm moving to Fort Worth in 2 days.
So when this airs, you'll be a Fort Worthy.
I'll be a Texan. My parents live in Texas. I'm really excited to move closer to them. But I just am pumped for what the future holds. And it's going to be very different. And Auburn is a hard place to be when you're not married and you don't have that kind of community. So I've had a lot of tough growing experiences in Auburn. But I'm excited to move somewhere with young people and just a new start.
A new start. That's so fun. Yeah, I mean, I think you'll love that. How fun being by family. But when I moved here, I mean, obviously I was single when I moved here because I met Josh and I was here. But you know, it's kind of, it was just nice to have a new start in your 20s. I think that's really nice. I'm so glad you're moving. Of course, we're going to miss you. So we're not glad you're moving, but like, I'm excited for you to move because I'm like the biggest proponent to people to do that.
Right. And new starts, fresh.
Yeah.
Freshness and just new ways to learn. And you're not growing if you're comfortable, and I'm comfortable in Auburn just going through my routine. So
yeah. Well, we'll talk about your career and coming to college, how crazy that whole situation was throughout your story. Okay. So tell us a funny story.
So I have a feeling, you know, this one's coming.
Wait, which one?
The one I'm about to tell.
Oh,
So on Tori and Josh's wedding, I was their pup attendant. And I also was dating Tori's old roommate. Shout out to Luke Clark.
What up, Luke? If you're not listening, I'm going to be so mad.
Yeah, Luke, I'm going to send this one special to you. So Luke and I were dating, and for some reason, at the end of the wedding, when Tori and Josh went out to their getaway trolley, somehow they told us to get on the trolley with them.
So no regrets.
So it was Tori and Josh and Luke and myself drinking champagne.
It was great.
On the trolley. It was so fun. It was a little bit like no one else in the world has ever done that. Like, who lets these two kids get in their getaway car?
Well, then it gets
better. We get to the hotel and they don't have the room for Tori and Josh. And I throw a fit.
We all lost our room. You're like, this is crazy.
I'm like, it's their wedding night and you don't have the honeymoon suite for them.
That had been confirmed numerous times. That was so bizarre.
Oh, yeah. And then I was like, this is ridiculous. You need to
sleeping in there.
Yeah. And so we ended up getting them another suite, and Luke and I walked them all the way
into the room.
We left, don't worry. But it was just such a weird interaction we had, but that was pretty
That was funny. And then let's also talk about the fact. So we were like drinking champagne, having fun. Like the wedding was over. I was like, oh my gosh. But I was still like living my best life.
You still had on the glitter, I mean, the light up shoes.
Yeah, like, I was like living my best life. Like, honestly, that's probably why I told y'all to get on the trolley. Like, I wasn't ready for the party to end because Josh and I talked about this before our wedding. And we do an episode where we talk about our wedding before the yours will air. And we just talk about how, like, for us, it was like we knew we were going to be us for the rest
forever.
Of our lives.
Yeah.
But we knew our favorite people in one place was a one time thing.
Yeah.
Like that was it. Yeah. So it was like, you know what? We're just going to keep partying until the end. That's why we did a first look. We were like, we want more time with the people. Who cares when you see me? Like, whatever. We just had fun. We danced. We listened to music.
Yeah. We were psycho.
Yeah. It was
we
great.
Really were
great.
Insane.
Best like getaway ever. So I love that. Okay. Well, good story. Good story. Good talk. Okay. So anything else you want to share? Are you ready to get into your story?
Yeah. Let's go.
Okay. So also, we didn't talk about this. So Louie loves SK, but SK also has a mini golden doodle.
I do.
From the same place that Louie was from.
I do.
So we have a love of doodles. And you can talk about him throughout your story because
he's an integral part of my story.
Yes.
But yes, Tate and Louie are best friends. Tate likes Louie a little more than Louie likes Tate. And when we have sleepovers, which happens, you know, a few nights, probably a month, they do not sleep. So it's really fun because they play all night long.
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, they both are like the same color-ish. Tate's a lot shorter than Louie, but weighs more.
Yeah, Tate had a little bit of stunted growth in his legs. We're not sure what happened.
It's so much harder to pick up.
He's heavy. He definitely weighs
more than Louie.
No, he's like 38 pounds.
For those of y'all that think I have a large dog, people tell me all the time, they're like, Tori, your dog is huge.
No, he's really not. He's so light.
So small. If you pick him up, you're like, oh, this is it?
Yeah.
Like, it's very bizarre. It's literally all fluff. He has no meat on his bones.
No, and he's not thick. Tate is thick.
You feel all of his bones when you touch him.
See, Tate looks like a sausage. And when you shave him, he really looks like a sausage. He looks like a rat.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, sausage. Let's get to your story. That's funny. So, anyways, she'll share about how he came into her life. But that is our big connection was through a dog, which I think is cool. So you've had quite a health journey at a young age and something that changed your life forever very early on. I mean, not when you were a baby, but time you would remember to be able to talk about. So walk us through the timeline and what your health journey is and your diagnosis and
just through that journey.
Absolutely. My junior year of high school, I started in May. I started passing out randomly all the time.
Huh.
And had these weird seizure-like activities that correlated directly with my migraines. And once the like pattern of my migraine changed, kind of the pattern of the seizure-like activity changed. But that was my whole entire end of my junior year, beginning of my senior year of high school. And it started improving probably around October, November of my senior year of high school. They couldn't tell me what it was. I went to Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania, like went all over. Doctors from all over the country were like looking into my case and trying to figure it out. And no one really, they were like, well, we don't understand the brain. It's a really big, complex organ, and there's a lot we don't understand.
But you probably had that intuition, like, I know this isn't
yes,
right.
Yes. And I was very clear with them that this was not normal. And they knew it wasn't normal. They just didn't know what it was, which made it even more frustrating. But my senior December, I'll never forget this. We were about to go on a cruise. I was extremely tired, like tired all the time, just felt like crap. So I told my mom and she took me to the doctor and they pricked my finger and my blood sugar was 252. Which, if you know anything about blood sugars, normal is between 70 and 120. Mm-hmm. Even after you've eaten, a normal person eats a ton, their pancreas makes the insulin enough to keep it lower than probably 150. Like, your sugar would probably never go above 150, 180. So 252 is alarming, and they said, come back for a fasting test. If it's normal, we don't have to worry about it, whatever, it could have been a fluke. So I came back for a fasting test. It was normal. We went on the cruise as normal. And then January rolled around and I was in pretty good shape. I was working out with a trainer and I just kept passing out. He was like, this isn't normal. Another boy I was dating at the time.
All about the booze.
Yikes. His dad, is a gynecologist and he really encouraged me to check my sugar and, to keep up with that. And so I was checking it and it was high. It was in the 300s. Boy and I broke up, stopped talking to his dad kind of thing in February, but March rolled around and I was pricking my finger and it kept saying HI, which means it's above 600, which is horrifying. And now if my sugar gets above 600, I lose my mind. It never gets above 600. Let's get that clear. If it even approaches a number above 300, I lose my mind. But I didn't know. I didn't know anything about diabetes. I didn't know anything about what these numbers meant. I thought, oh, well, I must have eaten something sugary, like blah, blah, blah. And I started feeling worse and worse. And my senior spring was characterized by me throwing up at the dinner table. When I would open my mouth, I would just throw up. I ate, like, probably not exaggerating, 10,000 calories a day. I drank gallons of water. I was peeing every 45 minutes. I slept all the time. I missed all the graduation parties. Like, I vividly remember being like, mom, I like can't even get up. I would pass out almost every morning. And it, when I went back to the doctor in February or late February, they're like, you don't have diabetes. Don't come with the diabetes complaint again. So I was like, okay, it's probably in my head, whatever. I didn't think about the numbers, blah, blah, blah. So move on to June after I've graduated high school. On June 8th, I knew something was wrong. And I had actually had lunch with a girl who is diabetic, like 3 days before, and just kind of got the feel for it. And I knew I didn't want to be wrong and go into the doctor and be like, okay, I think I have diabetes because they've already told me I didn't. So I went in and they said, I said, please check my urine for sugar, like maybe I have a UTI, something like that. And they came back in, they're like, oh, we need to prick your finger. And then it said HI and they said, you need to go to the hospital now. So I was whisked off to Virginia Commonwealth University. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I don't know if I mentioned that. And was diagnosed there with type 1 diabetes at 18, which is a little bit later than normal.
Oh, what is the normal?
12.
Okay.
Like 10 to 8 to 12 is like normal.
So you know pretty much your whole life for the normal.
Right. But now I don't know a day where I haven't pricked my finger. Like I can't remember a day where I haven't counted carbs and pricked my finger and thought about my blood sugar every second of the day. So I had a pretty brutal, rude awakening. I used to pass out when someone said the word IV, literally out cold. So they, on the first night, they came in and they're like, you're going to be doing this the rest of your life. You might as well start now. And I started giving myself shots that night. And it was just like a hard adjustment, but the Lord was so faithful in it. And he was so cool to reveal himself in so many ways, just through different people and like through different diabetics I met in school and stuff like that. Just the way that the Lord completely revealed himself, and I'll explain that more in a little while. But, so my diagnosis happened 8 weeks before I left for college, 5 states away. They told me that I wouldn't go to college, at least that first year. And they told me that I definitely wouldn't rush. And so when someone tells me I can't do something, I'm going to do it. It's one of my
The doctors. Okay.
So there was one endocrinologist who believed in me, and she's the best in the whole world, and I will see her until the day I die. And she's incredible. And she was like, you can do it. They also like don't traditionally. So usually with diabetes, you're on shots. And you take shots X amount of times a day, but there's a pump. And I said, I'm not going to college without the pump. And usually it's a 6-month waiting period before you can get on the pump. But I got on the pump right away. I like took control. It was scary. And a lot of it was me. I am very type A to a fault, and I like control, and I like to know what's going on. So the Lord really like stripped that from me, and made me trust in him in the fact that I can't control my blood sugar. Like my body has a mind of its own. Mm-hmm. And no matter what I do, if I do the same thing every day, it's going to be a different result. So that was cool how the Lord revealed himself that way. And I was really reminded of the story of Job that whole summer. That was the story that stuck out for me. Obviously he had a lot more taken away and he had a lot more challenges from the enemy and stuff like that, but it really was put things in perspective. Like when the Lord strips everything, you know, who's there, who's constant, where does your hope lie? And that was something that I like hadn't really examined before. Mm-hmm. So that was cool coming into college and being, I don't want to say new in my faith, but new in my faith, a new understanding of my faith, I should say, of just complete and utter lack of control. Yeah. And that was characterized by the whole first year. My whole first year of college, I felt absolutely out of control, like wacko, blood sugar everywhere. It was just like, well, when your body's adjusting from having it regulate itself to you having to regulate it for it, it just is a whole different world.
So I know you talked about God just teaching you a lot about letting go of control, but when you got your diagnosis or when you were sick that senior year and you knew you were going to go out of state to college, but you didn't know if you for sure were going to get to go, what were your feelings towards God? Because I feel like with things that I've gone through my life, I've just been like, why? Like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, why is this happening to me? Like, what were like some of the thoughts you remember feeling towards God? And then what was the like tipping point where you knew, okay, I'm actually going to go to Auburn.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
So I would say that my why to God happened that whole first year, especially the first 6 weeks, 8 weeks. I was frustrated and I was angry, and I was something that I say all the time and I mean is that I would never wish diabetes on my worst enemy. It's just something where you have to be on your A game literally every second of every day. When you're asleep, when you're awake, when you're working out, when you're having fun with friends, when you're drinking, when you're eating, like everything affects it. So it was never really, I didn't ever wish it would just go away, because I knew that there was a purpose to it. Does that mean it was easy? No, not at all. And does that mean I did want it to go away? Absolutely. But I never like wished it away, because I knew that this was going to be pivotal to my story, and I knew it was going to be pivotal to my relationships and the way I viewed life and my career. And like, I knew that this was just stepping blocks, to where the Lord was going to place me and where he was going to use me. So I I knew from that day in the hospital that I was going to Auburn, even though no one else believed me.
Like, what did your parents think?
So my parents are awesome. They've been super supportive. But again, I was 18 when this happened.
I would have probably freaked out as a mom.
So my parents were, my mom especially was just sad because I had been sick for so long. And they told me when I was diagnosed that I should have been dead 3 months before.
Wow.
So my body was just like completely on the rocks. Like I was 80 pounds. I was completely like skin and bone, purple in the face. Like just, it was not cute.
Did you ever remember a time like people would just like hadn't seen you in a while and they saw you like,
well, Easter, that senior year, we were with my family at the beach. And they were like, are you anorexic? Like, is there something going on? I was like, have you seen me eat? Like, all I do is eat. Because at that point, I was eating, like, constantly. Like, I would sit down and be like, mom, I need a snack. And eat yogurts at once. Because your body is eating itself. Because it's trying to break down that sugar with the fat. Yeah. So, in turn, you go into ketoacidosis, which is, like, a lot of what the keto diet uses a lot of the same mechanisms without it being unsafe, if that makes sense. Like it's not, your body isn't going acidotic, but it uses ketones to like break things down. So, but my parents are like very supportive. They're awesome, but I was 18. So they never really learned, and I was only home for 6 weeks. So they never really learned the ins and outs of diabetes. They were very supportive. They equipped me with everything that I needed. My mom felt super guilty because she hadn't seen the signs that were very obvious. When you look through a textbook, like I checked off every single one. So they had their own like struggles with it. And I honestly haven't really delved into that with them very much. Definitely gotten better and definitely like improved as the years have gone on. But they were completely supportive. And was my mom freaked out? Yes. But I also think she didn't know the amplitude and the like extreme danger of this disease. Like, I think it was a little naive.
If they would have known now, you may have never gotten to come here.
They probably would have begged me to stay close. Yes.
Well,
so it's all part of the plan. Yeah. But I would say that unless you have diabetes or unless you're the primary caretaker for someone with diabetes, you never really know exactly what it entails. It's a very invisible disease. So you could look at me and I look perfectly healthy and you would never know. Yet on my mind every minute, what's my blood sugar? What is this activity going to do to it? What am I going to look like in an hour? What do I need to eat? How do I need to prepare? So that's been kind of a challenge too, is feeling invisible, of just like people just don't know and they don't get it. And like I turn into a complete and utter psychopath brat when my sugar is low, and like no one understands that it's because I don't have any sugar in my brain. My brain doesn't operate with no sugar.
Yeah.
So I've had to like adjust and learn when to be quiet. especially when it comes to that.
Tell us like more about like, you know, you talked about like it's invisible. So like if you're in a bad mood, it's, you know, it's internal, but nobody knows that. So like, how are other ways that it's affected your daily life? And because I think this would be great for people to know, because so many people have diabetes, but they don't have any clue what they're going through.
Yeah. So type 1 is 5% of diabetics. So it's a very small portion. And type 2s definitely have this, but this is more related to type 1s. Which means you're insulin dependent, means you can't live without an outside source of insulin. There's just constant counting. Like everything is a math problem.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. It's every second of the day. Like you wake up in the middle of the night. Okay, what do I need to do? How do I need to troubleshoot my body? How do I need to like go on with this? And when you're in the middle of something, like for example, I was on a call last night and my blood sugar dropped and I was like, I just got to suck it up until I get this patient into the hospital. Like I just have to focus hard on taking care of my patient, which is not always a reality. And sometimes you have to stop and listen to your body. But that definitely, no one can see how you're feeling. Like people can see me visibly shaking, but to the point where I'm visibly shaking, there's a whole decline that people don't feel and people don't see. And like when my sugar is low, I feel horrible. I feel like I'm gonna pass out. I feel exhausted. And then when I finally get my sugar up, I have a headache. I'm tired. Like your whole body is just fighting itself constantly. And it's in flight or fight mode because you're constantly in survival. So it's just hard to regulate it. And I've gotten better at it, but it's definitely hard to just like stay on an even keel. And that's what makes it so challenging because you're constantly feeling one way. So you're, you know, it's just a roller coaster of emotions and a roller coaster of feelings. And no one sees that.
Yeah.
So that was something that was like very hard for me to understand. And like, no one sees me crawling to the bathroom at 2 a.m. when my blood sugar is 40. Like no one sees that. Or no one sees when I literally have to stop in the middle of a workout and sit down because I'm going to pass out if I don't, or no one sees when I am vomiting in the bathroom because my blood sugar is too high. Like just different things like that, that go into the daily, just every single day is something new. So, and it's always different. Like if I ate the same thing every single day, same amount of carbs, gave myself the same amount of insulin, my blood sugar would be different every single day, which is mind blowing. Like there's no fix. Like it's not like, okay, if you have high blood pressure, we're going to take this pill and it's going to bring your blood pressure down to here. It can be a little variable, but you won't feel any different. This is like constant titration and calibration to your body.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that because I just think like the more you know, the more empathetic you are. I know just empathy to me is like the greatest gift, but a lot of times you don't even know how to be empathetic until you really know like
what someone's
going through. Yeah. So yeah, I appreciate that. Well, you know, I loved how you shared that God's just been so good to you. So will you tell us any blessings specifically or anything that you have just seen him intricately place you in situations or people that have just maybe blessed you so much through, you know, your journey?
Yeah. So first and foremost, my doctor in Richmond, she's incredible.
Shout out.
Dr. Lee.
What up? So any people, y'all go see her.
Anybody at Virginia Commonwealth University, good luck getting on her list. She's always full. She's incredible. And she really believed in me from the beginning. And she said, you can do this. We're not.
Belief is so powerful.
Yes. And like, diabetes doesn't have to stop you from everything. So that's been my main kind of catchphrase is diabetes isn't going to stop me from anything. Now, has it altered the way I do things? Absolutely. And the way I've gone about things? Sure. But it has not explicitly stopped me from anything. I think that the Lord was just so present. My freshman year fall of college was super lonely, and as it is for anybody else coming to period, but especially going out of state to a big school where you don't know anybody. And that was my time where I like was super reliant on the Lord's grace and his faithfulness to sustain. And I realized that throughout this journey that my life can be taken in an instant. And that I really have no control over what the Lord decides to do with me. So if I die, I die. And that kind of put things in perspective of like, where is my heart and where am I going if I die? So that's been a super cool journey of like, okay, Lord, you've sustained me thus far, but like, if you choose that this is my time, like I know I'm going home with you and I know that my body will be healed and I know that there will be no more sickness and I know that there will be no more pain and I like rest in that. But I think that my story has been used for a lot of, I love children and I love working with them and I get to work with them a lot on the ambulance. I worked in a diabetes clinic in Chicago after my freshman year of college. And that was just cool to show them that like you can live normally and you can have a life outside of this, because when you're you're 10 years old, and I cannot imagine growing up with this and being 10 years old playing on the playground and having to stop because my sugar's low, having to stop because I feel weird and no one else has to do that. So that was cool to kind of show them and be able to relate to them and be like, yeah, this sucks. Like, this is a lot. Yeah. And this will be the hardest thing that hopefully you ever have to overcome. Yeah. And continue to fight every day. But it doesn't have to be the end all be all. And so that's been cool to remind myself of that too, because a lot of times I'll get in my head and get in this funk of just like, I'm so tired of it. Like, I can't keep up. Like, I can't function, blah, blah, blah. So that's been super cool to be able to express to these kids, especially newly diagnosed when they're in the hospital, they have no idea what's happening. And I can be like, hey, I got it too. Like,
yeah,
it's something that you can totally do whatever you put your mind to, once you do it. And there are definitely like much harder diseases out there, but this is just a constant. Like, this is something that, there's not a second in the day, like I've said, that you don't think about it. So it's cool to be able to relate to children like that. I've had a lot of great doctors and a lot of people who've like really believed in me and poured into me. My church from home was just incredible, at like praying over me and coming and visiting me when I was in the hospital. And I have really great friends and a lot of friends who, follow my blood sugar and have since the very beginning. Shout out to you, Ann Boab, and will call me if I'm low. She'll call in the middle of the night and be like, hey, you're low, you know, check your sugar. So that's been something. And my mom is such a huge blessing. So before I got Tate, just a little intro to Tate, he is my diabetic alert dog. And before I got Tate, I really wanted a diabetic alert dog. And this was summer after my freshman year of college when I was working at the diabetes clinic. And I called my parents and I was like, I'm getting one, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, you're not. You can't handle that. And turns out I really couldn't have handled it. Thank you, mom and dad. Because a dog is a lot to handle when you're an adult. yeah. So like a lot. So I actually was very angry and told my mom in the heat of the moment that, well, if she wasn't going to get me a diabetes dog, she can be my diabetic alert dog and she can wake up at 2 a.m. and check my sugar every night. And to this day, my sweet mother wakes up in the middle of the night and checks on my sugar and checks on me. And, you know, normally it's fine. And now that I have Tate, I think that's kind of a relief to her too. But faithfully every night, like, she will check it and she's just so kind and such a picture of like who Jesus is and just holding on to you and walking you through that. So
wow,
mom rocks.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. And that commitment and that just shows like that unconditional love. Like she probably doesn't even think about it. She's just like, this is what I do. 'Cause this is what I was meant to do. Well, talk about kind of your journey with Tate. So you trained him to be a diabetic dog.
Yes.
So tell about like how that happened and what he does in your life.
Yeah. So, I was very sure that I wanted a diabetic alert dog even, after my mother woke up all the time. So after I graduated college and everything like that happened, I decided to start doing my research, and there's a lady, based out of Wisconsin, and she actually does a full course that you can take online in learning how to train your dog. So you have this pretty intensive course of like watching videos and learning kind of the techniques of how to train a dog. Obviously he's not perfect. He's a little bit crazy.
You should see her face when she said he's not perfect.
He's not perfect, but no one is. So I learned that and, did research on breeds, and I knew that I loved Louie. And poodles have great noses.
Yeah.
So, and they're smart, and golden retrievers are smart too. So I was like, okay, we'll take this risk. Like, let's get a puppy. So from day one of getting him, I started introducing him to my blood sugar. So when your sugar goes low, your body puts off a smell that we can't smell. But someone with a much stronger nose, aka my dog, can smell the changes in my like scent. So that's how he alerts. So we worked hard. We worked pretty much every day to with a low, whether that be old blood that's in the freezer or whether that be a time where I'm low. We work every single day to just maintain those alerts. But so it was pretty intensive, and I would say that I'm not really great at the follow through on things, but this was something that I was very serious about and something that I spent a lot of money on. So it kind of like puts things in perspective, like you need to keep doing this. So it was hard. But by Valentine's Day of last year, I felt that he, which was super fast. I felt that
she got him. You got him when? November.
In Thanksgiving. By February, I felt that he was competent enough to be considered a service dog. So we went through some testing. And so a service dog means they have to alert for something. Like they have to have a reaction to an action. So when my sugar goes low, he reacts. So it was super cool. And he is so proud of himself every time he does it. He's a little cocky, but that's okay. And he is such a faithful pup. He is wild. He's a year and a half now, and he still has some puppy in him. He likes to run. He gets the zoomies, but I have a camera that I was watching the way that he alerted me when I was sleeping. So I placed it in my room and just like watched him do it. And he stays up pretty much all night when he knows like the window that I mostly go low, which is from about like 11 p.m. to about 3 to 4, and he stays awake.
Aww.
And he like literally watches over me. And if he sleeps, it's super light. He is relentless. He does not stop until I get up. And even if I like roll over and smack him, like he will not stop until I get up and get something to eat. So he's super smart. A couple weeks ago, I was at work and I get to bring him to work, and I work 24-hour shifts. Well, thank God yesterday was my last one. Got off this morning. Whew. But he gets to come to the station with me. So I was not waking up, and my partner sleeps in a bed like across the little divider. And Tate couldn't get me up, so he woke up my partner to get me up, which was the first time he had ever done that, obviously, because I like sleep by myself and, you know,
yeah.
I'm at my house by myself. But he like got him up and made sure that I was okay. So he's just been such a blessing, and I've slept better in the past year than I have in the past five, almost 6 years.
Wow.
So he's great.
That's a blessing. Yeah, that's so cool. It's so cool, like all the things like that can just change your life that they have if you just actually use them. Okay, so were there any, I know you kind of talked about like passing out. Do you remember any very specific stories that you feared for your life?
Okay, well, every time I go to the eye doctor, I now pass out because of this story. My first ever low blood sugar. So when your blood sugar is low, you risk seizures, you risk passing out, you risk dying, you risk a lot of things. And that's much more immediate than if your sugar's high.
Yeah.
So if your sugar's high, it's like a longer,
yeah,
I don't want to say a longer, more painful death, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
When your sugar's low, it's like, you're out.
Yeah.
So I was in the eye doctor and I was getting my eyes checked. This was right after I was diagnosed. I was pretty much blind because of the blood vessels in my eyes were so full of sugar. I don't really know how to explain it in layman's terms other than that. And so I was blind for like almost a month after I was diagnosed, like couldn't see my phone, couldn't drive, couldn't see anything. It was a disaster, but I almost passed out. I might've passed out. I don't remember. And this eye doctor, and I was alone and it was dark, and it was the first time I had ever felt that. And it was the first time I had ever crashed like that. And I honestly didn't know what to do. So, and I didn't know why I was feeling that way. And at that moment I was like, okay, this is it. I don't know what to do. There have been a few instances where I've had low sugars, but usually I'm out of it enough to like not be super worried. I'm very flight or fight. So I'm not like super worried about death in that sense of the word, but throughout when I was in the hospital, there were a lot of hard conversations we had with the doctors about long-term complications and what my organs were doing then versus what they could do in 5 years. And just a lot of things that were super heavy that an 18-year-old doesn't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my questions, which if anyone knows me, knows that literally I desire to be a mother more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of my questions was like, will I be able to have babies? And yes, I will. Will it make it more complicated? Absolutely. But that was just something that kind of was what I was worried about at the beginning. So I would say I was fearing for my life and an overall picture of just fear and anxiety and worries about what the future held. And I really have tried to relinquish that to the Lord because like my days are numbered and I don't know what they look like. And so I've just really tried to relinquish a lot of that fear, but there are definitely days where I'm like, am I going to make it out of this?
Yeah.
So
you kind of talked about anxiety and just like the why God and the anger. So through this journey, you've definitely walked through some anxiety and some depression and things that whether someone has diabetes or whether they're just sad or all kinds of stuff. Most people are going to walk through that, unfortunately, in some way. So will you tell us about that struggle and that journey and what you've learned?
Absolutely. So I was always an anxious person. I would cry when I was late to school. I would hate anything where I felt like I was out of control, obviously. So that anxiety really ramped up as I went through this journey alone of just not knowing like what I was doing with my body. And I dealt with it pretty well, until the end of college. And after college, all of my friends moved away and things got real. Things got put into perspective of me of I'm lonely and my heart is hurting and I feel like my community is gone. And these people that I've felt like they were my home for 4+ years are now gone. So I started the road down experimenting with antidepressants. An anti-anxiety medicine, which ended up making me over a course of 7-8 months, completely numb, absolutely numb to any kind of feelings, any kind of emotions, any kind of excitement, any kind of sadness. And I work a hard job. I work a job where you see a lot of crap. Like you see a lot of things that you don't forget. And I wasn't reacting appropriately according to what I was seeing. Cause I am human and I should have reactions and I should have emotions. So it became very real to me last April, or the end of March that I was not okay. And that I was over-medicated and just absolutely a blank wall. Like there was nothing coming in, there's nothing going out. So through a series of events and mental breakdowns, I came to the realization that I needed off. I needed off of my medications. They just needed to go. So I weaned off of the ones that I had to wean off of. And my parents graciously enough let me come home for a month and just like reset. And like, I was so far from the Lord because I wasn't feeling anything. And while faith is not just feeling, I know that there you have to want it and you have to pursue it. And I didn't pursue anything. My relationships were crap. Like everyone who I was friends with, had a relationship with, like didn't know who I was. So that month was super hard and super eye-opening, especially because I was staying with my parents, which I hadn't done in 5+ years.
And in a pandemic.
And that definitely didn't help, the isolation of that. And being a frontline healthcare worker did not help. But I would say that it was more pre-pandemic issues than during the pandemic. Yeah. So I took that month and I really reset and reset my mind and reset my body and reset spiritually and the Lord was so faithful in that and saying like, I'm here and I'll meet you where you are. Like you don't need to do anything but be like, you can be still and know that I am God. Like, be still. Cause I had constantly had these distractions and kept busy, and I was in paramedic school and I was working two full-time jobs and I was just like constantly busy. And that's how I distracted myself. And the Lord really slowed me down and made me examine parts of my heart and insecurities that I had never wanted to or explored before. So that being said, it's definitely been a struggle. And I finished paramedic school at the end of November and decided that was like, I knew I needed a change from Auburn and I knew I needed to get out and I knew I needed a bigger place, which is part of the reason I'm so excited to move on. But I completely got off all of my medication and I like have a very good routine of, and there's nothing wrong with medication. Obviously I have a medication that keeps me alive. And it also, when people have a stigma against medication, I tell them, well, I have insulin that keeps me alive. You have a chemical imbalance in your brain that you need to fix too. And I think that puts things in perspective instead of it just being like a crutch, so to speak. And that helped me too. But I decided what was best for me was just to go off everything.
That's awesome.
So it's been really, it's hard. And I have to do a lot of self-checks because obviously I'm prone to this anxiety. I'm prone to this depression. And I have a significant family history of it. So, but I've learned how to check myself before I wreck myself and just lean on the Lord in that and know this whole season being alone is good. And being still is good and being quiet is good, which I am not good at, but learning that is good, has been super helpful to me, and really opened my eyes and helped me mature in a way that like, I obviously wasn't mature in, still am not mature. I'm still a 5-year-old at heart. But it's been really cool to see the way that the Lord has like been my crutch through it and picked me up from the lowest of lows and been like, you're worthy and I still love you. And my grace is enough.
Amen.
Because that was something that I really struggled with too. Yeah.
Well, thank you for really sharing that with honesty, because I think when you see someone like you said, like you have this invisible disease, people think of you as just this happy-go-lucky person. It just shows that like, you never know what's going on in the inside of someone. And depression, anxiety is truly the hardest thing to me, because no matter what you're going through, that's always an extra part of it that usually comes with it. So I appreciate you sharing how you've been able to come on the other side, but it's still a daily struggle. So you kind of talked about your job and seeing hard things. Will you tell us, you know, briefly about how you became a paramedic, that was not what you went to school for, and some of the, not, you can't tell us about what you've seen, you know, whatever, but like how you are day to day doing a job where you see hard things, but you're serving others, and maybe how getting diagnosed with something a few years before brought you full circle to all of this.
Absolutely. It definitely did bring it full circle, and the Lord definitely put those puzzle pieces together. When I ask why me, I know that my purpose is to serve others in the medical field.
Amen.
I know that this is what I'm supposed to do.
Isn't that the best?
Yeah. It's like getting up and going to work, even when the days are hard, you're like, this is my purpose. And not everyone is designed for this. And I'm not designed to be a teacher, like not designed for that at all. I'm not designed to do a lot of different things, but like, this is where I fit. And this is my niche. So I was originally wanted to be a special ed teacher, which I
me still, too. Really? Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, I double majored in speech and special education in college.
Wait, I know.
Didn't even crazy. Know that. Yeah.
So I wanted to do that, and I, you know, worked with special needs kids all of high school and pretty much all of college. Did best buddies, all that.
Oh, me too. BP.
Really? Yes. Yes. Yeah.
BP best buddies.
I still talk to my best buddy at least 3 or 4 times a week. She calls me and tells me she loves me. It's really a great relationship we have. But as I went to college for that, I realized I wanted to do something more medical.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied to nursing school. My junior...
I never knew this.
Yeah, right before my senior year of college. So I applied to VCU, which is an accelerated nursing program.
So you were going to transfer?
No, I was going to finish it in Auburn. So it was a BSN program.
Yeah.
So I was going to do that, but... I was a debutante, which surprises a
lot. Debutante! Can we say it like that? I was a debutante in Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, except I'm literally the least debutante person you've ever
met. I know. I'm like, it is so funny. It's where you wear the white dresses.
Yes.
And the gloves. It's where you wear
the wedding dresses and the gloves, and it's a bride auction. It's not really that great. It actually was...
People say it's really fun.
It was so fun.
Keep going with your story. Side note of the debutante. Yeah.
So I was a debutante. Surprises most people. I'm not really debutante material. But one of my good friends from growing up, hey, Chris Thompson.
What up, Chris? Shout out.
I'm going to make him listen to this too.
He will.
He said, hey, why don't you come to Charlottesville one night to do a ride along with me? And so I did. It was an interesting night for sure. So I went
you rode in the ambulance
with him.
Like on the stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was, you could do it. Come on, Tori.
Oh God. I'd be like, this girl won't shut up.
You have to get a little bit overwhelmed about what's going on. And I think it would make you silent. I think it would freak you out.
It would freak me out. This is my thing. I've always said this, and this is your story, not mine, but for y'all to know mine. I would have loved to be a nurse or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would have loved that. Yeah. Like, talking to people, helping people, like, in their saddest times, happiest times, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't do smells.
Okay, honestly, the smell of old people urine is what gets me. I can do poop. I can do throw up. I can do...
But, like, how... You're numb to those smells. I wish I was. I pray to be numb to all those smells.
You will when you have a baby.
We hope. We hope I'll be numb. Otherwise, I'd be like, Josh, I smell it.
I can't, Josh.
Yeah. Oh, I smell the throw up. Ah, God. Louie threw up yesterday, and I was like, Josh, I can't even function. He's like, you're going to have to pick it up. Thank you. So, okay, keep going.
Oh, I love Josh. So, he was like, do this ride along, whatever. So, I went and did the ride along, and then I was like, there's something to this.
Yeah.
So, I had applied for nursing school that summer, and I had taken all my classes, taken all my prereqs, you know, all that stuff. And I started a basic EMT class that fall of my senior year while I was taking a full load at Auburn. It was a little bit of a
and
mess.
I think this is so relatable, y'all. Outside of any of her story, how quickly her life changed with her career. That is like
in 2 seconds. One night.
So many people struggle so much with that. But like, it's okay to change it.
Oh, and you need to change it. You need to explore. You need to figure out your options and figure out what you love to do. So I got on the ambulance as a basic EMT. I had no idea what I was doing. I still sometimes don't always know what I'm doing a lot of the time. Don't worry, if you call 911, I'll show up. But yikes. But I fell in love with it. And I actually ended up getting into this accelerated nursing program. And I told my parents at Thanksgiving that I was going to do paramedic school instead of nursing school. And if you don't know anything about public servants, just know that they're doing it because they love their job, not because they're getting paid well. We get paid like absolute garbage. And my parents knew that. And so they know that I have expensive tastes. Sorry to my future husband.
You do have expensive taste.
I do have very expensive. But the thing is, I pay for everything myself. Like, I can, if I want something, I can figure out how to work hard enough to get it.
You're like that, yeah. If you want a $500 purse,
you're going to get it. $500 purse. It just might take me a month.
Yeah, you're going to do it.
It might take me a few overnight shifts. But so that was one of their things for like, you can't sustain this. But I have, and I love it, and I don't want to do anything else. So
what has it taught you?
So being a paramedic has taught me a lot about meeting people on their worst days. So were saying, I have the opportunity to walk into someone's house and meet them at the very worst moment of their life. At the moment where their husband is dead on the floor, or their child is in severe respiratory distress, or just they receive bad news and they're having a panic attack or whatever it may be, I get to meet them in their worst moment. And I think that that is something that not a lot of jobs you get to do. And that's my favorite thing. And being out in the field, it's really raw and it's really, you walk into every disgusting house, every gross person you touch. Disgusting.
Do you even think about it now though? Or is it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's some things where I literally like have to debrief afterwards because it's so gross. But most things don't gross me out.
I was about to say, you just go with it.
Eyeballs gross me out because, again, back to my
story,
but that's the only thing that I can't do. I literally can't do eye emergencies. But back to the point. I get to walk in and meet these people and see their life. Like, you walk into someone's house and you can know so much about how they live and who they are and what they may struggle with and stuff like that. And empathy has taken me to a whole another level. I think that especially with my anxiety and depression and with my diabetes, I've learned to meet people where they are. And some people just need you to look them in the eyes and be like, hey, even if you don't think your life matters, I think your life matters. Compassion and empathy has, I have tried. Now I'm not perfect and I'm not always like this and I'm not always kind, but that has tried to be the two like characterizing terms of how I am in regards to medicine. Obviously I have to do my job and I have to do hard things and I have to say hard things and I have to tell people hard things, but that has been cool to be like, you know what? You can be a light to Jesus without even saying anything, without even saying his name. You can show who he is. And that's why I think this is my purpose. And that's how I feel like I can, interact and help other people and help them see Jesus through me. And that's been my goal of just making people feel not alone and feel like they are heard. Because in a world that's so busy and everyone's talking at you all the time, especially when we walk in the door, you're getting bombarded with 100,000 questions. Like, you are heard and your concerns are heard, and your pain is felt.
Yeah.
So that also ties back into my being completely numb, is when I realized that when I couldn't do that anymore is when I needed to take a step back. And there was something wrong. So that's been kind of my check, because it is a hard job and I see a lot of hard things, and have a lot of hard conversations and see things that I'll never forget and that I would never hope that anybody has to see again. But that's been my check. Okay, are you still feeling things? Mm-hmm. Are you still getting upset when X, Y, and Z happens? Are you still having emotions when you have a pediatric cardiac arrest? Like, are you feeling that? Because that's something you need to feel. So that's been a cool check and balance for me. I've had a lot of cool conversations with patients. I've learned so much from patients of just the way that they live their life and the way that they have different views and different opinions on things and the way that they love Jesus and the way that they minister to me, even when they're sick and on my stretcher. So that's kind of how I balance out my work-life balance of just realizing that this is my purpose. Mm-hmm. And that there's more than just a paycheck, because it's not big. I'll tell you that. I work a lot of jobs. And that it's just so much bigger than anything that you have to offer. And like, it's not my doing, it's not my saving power, you know, it's and that kind of puts things in perspective too, like, because you can't save them all. Okay, well, which is hard, but you also have to know that everybody has a time and everybody has a purpose. So that's been cool to
Well, thanks for sharing all of that. We appreciate what you do for the world, and how cool to have a job where, you know, you're living out your purpose, but not, it's not for the money, it's for the day-to-day fulfillment, but also the changing lives. That's cool. So one last thing of thoughts, you know, a lot of our listeners, they may have an illness that none of us know about, or all of us know about, or they're going to have one day.
Right.
What's your biggest advice on how to stay positive when you're not feeling good and when you have this thorn that's there?
So I definitely think it's all about perspective and it's all about mindset. So even if you feel like poo, literally all the time. I just think about, like, and it's hard to think like this, and I'm not saying I think like this all the time, and I'm not saying it's easy. But I think about how much I would rather feel something, even if it's bad, than not feel anything at all.
Yeah.
And the fact that I am still alive means that I still have purpose on this earth. And even if it sucks and even if it's hard, I was having a conversation the other day about how the Lord has had to sustain me through so much. And this person was saying that they've kind of been able to sustain themselves, which is awesome. Great. But I fully believe that everyone's going to hit that wall of like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do it myself. And where does your hope lie? Like where's your purpose, and what greater things can come out of this? And even when it sucks, and you're allowed to have down days. And I don't think people understand that. You're allowed to have days where you're like, I hate diabetes and diabetes sucks and I'm over it.
Yeah.
And I don't usually allow myself to have those days, but the more that I realize that I'm allowed to have those days, the easier it's become.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to wallow in it, and it's okay to, I don't want to say feel sorry for yourself, but yes, feel sorry for yourself for a minute. But you have to put it in bigger perspective of like, okay, yes, but does this define me? Like, you are not your disease, and that is a common misconception.
Yeah.
And even if it controls some parts of your life, like, that is not all you are. And you are worth so much more. And you are a child of the Lord, and you have a purpose beyond the pain. So I think that that's like kind of my perspective on how I go about day to day of just that kind of struggle.
Well, thank you so much for just sharing your heart. Let's wrap it up. And you have a lot of favorite things in your world that you're your go-tos.
Yes.
So tell us three of your current favorites, must-haves, recommendations, anything and everything you think the people need to know. Me and you are queens of recommendations.
We really are.
Like, if we hear of something, we're going to go get it, or we're going to tell the whole world about it.
Exactly. And we also like to try new things.
We love
and
new things.
We like to tell other people what to do.
Yeah. So. Like, what? Like, try the new thing. If we find something good, we're going to tell the whole world. So okay. What are your newest? Because you always know the latest goods.
Okay. Well, I don't know about that, but this kind of ties in. So Tori and I bought a spray tan machine.
I was wondering if you'd say spray tan.
And
how long ago was that?
I think it was almost 2 years. Maybe it was a year and a half ago.
Y'all want to know something funny? The first time, I can't even believe I'm saying this. Josh is going to kill me. But the first time we tried to figure out this spray tan, we're in my garage. And SK spraying me booty naked, butt naked. And we couldn't quite see. So I called Josh in, and I'm like, get a flashlight. And so he's over there like, looking close to my leg, like, get a little more right there, get it a little more.
And we used a leaf blower to dry off.
Oh, leaf blower. Yeah, he was like, oh, use this. This will dry off. And he's like, leaving me. Oh my gosh, keep going.
It was a mess. We love our spray tans. I hate being pale. The Norvell purple bottle mist stuff is a game changer.
So good.
Spray it on your face, and it's like game over. Like, it's not splotchy, it doesn't leave lines.
Like, we weren't as good with spray tans in the pandemic as we were before.
Yeah, no, because we didn't do anything.
I know. It just went to point. Yeah. But a spray tan makes you feel so good.
It makes you look skinnier. It makes you feel better. It boosts your confidence. You feel like you're getting some vitamin D, even though you're not. Like, it's great.
And it's safer than the sun.
Yeah, exactly. I love a spray tan. Get a spray tan. I'm really into heating pads right now.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't really know. this might be TMI. I just went to Haiti for 2 weeks and worked on the ambulance in Haiti. And I'm pretty sure I probably have a parasite after this. So my stomach cramps literally all the time. So I use my heating pad all the time, and I'm cold all the time. And kind of with a heating pad, this is like kind of number three, not really number three, is a weighted blanket.
Okay, people love them.
Oh, I'm a big proponent. I think they're so fun. I think they keep you so cozy. I think, you know, when you're just like sleeping alone and kind of sad, you're like, oh, well, at least I have this blanket to hug me. True life people probably think I'm a freak.
People love them. They're very pricey.
They are very expensive. Lululemon joggers. Game changer.
Huh.
The joggers. You really got to get
them. So they're worth the investment.
Yes. And not the ones that are like super tight joggers. Like, I don't like that look. I think it's a little bit silly. I wish I knew the name of them, but they're the
Lululemon joggers. You can send it to me and we'll put it in the shout outs. We'll link it. You're right. Let me tell you.
Also, Lululemon joggers and Spanx leggings. I don't even wear Lululemon leggings every day anymore. I wear Spanx leggings because they suck you in so much better, but
worth it.
Yeah. And honestly, the knockoffs aren't worth it.
No,
they don't do it. They don't suck it in. So, Lululemon joggers and Spanx leggings. That's all.
Those are great, fabulous recommendations. True influencer. Influencing the world.
Catch me at what is that popular page?
Add to the cart. Cha-ching. No, those are good. I agree with all of those. Heating pads, I need to step my game up with that, but I need to invest in the joggers. But everything else, okay, I'm rolling.
Well, we're going to go. Get some joggers.
Get the joggers right now. Okay. Work the extra for the $500 joggers.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much, SK. Let's go eat our stuffed peppers.
Thank you.
I appreciate you and love you so much, and we're going to miss you, but I know your story and your honesty and your humor, debutante, is going to help so many people. Yes. So thanks, girly.
And wait, before you stop it, I just want to say thank you, Tori, for doing this.
Aww.
And thank you for being so open and vulnerable with your own story and your own way that you can talk to people and relate to people. Making it more accessible for even the areas that you don't necessarily understand for more people to learn about. And I think that's so cool. And you have such a purpose and you have so many great things going.
Oh, well, I love you. So nice. Love you too. That's so kind. Well, I appreciate you because I know it's not always easy to share your story. So everyone that shares, I just am so thankful. But let's go cuddle the doodles.
Okay, bye.
If our episode today touched you, inspired you, or brought you some good laughs, we would be honored if you subscribe to the Talk with Tori podcast and left us a quick review. This will give others who are scrolling through the podcast apps the ability to find us. Please share this with all the people in your life so more friends can hear our stories. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope this episode brought you joy, love, and spice.